It's Friday!
Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Australia!
France!
Germany!
UK!
Africa!
Here we go! Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this, the first Friday of November 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the Great Globe Round, and whatever time it happens to be when you're listening to the podcast. Hi, I'm Robin. When last we spoke, I played a little practical joke on Tuesday, Halloween. November has begun. This is our first program of November. And I'm not going to lie, I'm a mite tired. But, well, we'll get to it all. But anyway, if you're listening to the podcast, please be so kind as to like each and every episode and to make sure you're subscribed on a couple of platforms in case a program fails to post on one of them. And if you're listening live, well, by all means, feel free to participate in the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room, the 3 hours in which this program is live. We kind of did that part. But if you do, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. That would be Too Much Hutch and Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo. And well, nobody's moderating except yours truly, which is like having no one moderate at all, because I'm just not good at it. It is Friday on the front porch, and that means there's a button at the top of HeadOn.live that'll carry you here in about an hour or so over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, wherein we keep the extraordinary, ordinary round table around which we gather on Fridays to cuss and discuss all of the happenings of the week and whatever happens to be on folks' minds. Mm-hmm. And that could be just about anything on any given Friday. I'm a proud new grandma. It was kind of weirdly prophetic because I was planning on being on air this past Wednesday. Of course, I haven't been here since the program closed on Tuesday, Halloween. And I made some crack about it because I was half-addled. Thank heavens little Luna is here, because I've been sort of for the last couple of weeks waiting on her arrival and waiting to hit the road and all of that. And what I said on Tuesday was I guess we'll not be having prayer meeting Wednesday on Wednesday, because I had done a whole bunch of prayer meeting stories on Tuesday. What I meant by that was that I had, in fact, run through all my prayer meeting stories, and that so Wednesday would just be a regular broadcast day. Well, it turns out there wasn't a prayer meeting Wednesday. Early on Wednesday afternoon, we got a very excited, nervous phone call from our son, who said, "I think it's going to be today." At which point, Annette and I both went into sweat condition alpha, and Annette began field marshaling, getting us ready to, because it meant taking Annette's, I don't get to say our, he's entirely Annette's, getting ready to take Annette's breathtakingly wonderful, handsome, golden boy, Mr. Shadow, over to our daughter's to visit with her for a couple of days in our absence. And the entire day was, the entire afternoon was consumed with that. We finally got on the road for Bristol, Tennessee, probably about 7:30 Wednesday evening. Had a beautiful day for travel. Not a cloud in the sky. The moon not quite full, but absolutely a sort of beautiful waxy golden color. Traffic wasn't bad at all, and so we wound up getting to Bristol. It took a little longer than one might have expected. We got there about 11:30 because we had to do this and do that, and on top of it all, because I wanted to do my part and make sure there's been a slow leak in my right rear tire, so I went and had the friendly fellas at Wally World, whence came the tires, go over everything. And they came back and said, "Well, yeah, you probably do have a slow leak in your right rear tire, because, see, your wheel is cracked." And for a minute there, I was like, that could be some sort of Appalachianism. "Well, yeah, your wheel's cracked." But no, in fact, I've got a structural failure in the right rear wheel, and that's got to be replaced at some point in time. And so I got everything properly inflated, and then by the time we made it about 135 miles, the tire inflation light came on, tire pressure light came on. And so we took the next exit, and there, once upon a time in America, y'all, and most of y'all know this, unless you're like one of the Gen Z members of the community, of which there are a couple. But once upon a time, you could pull into a service station and air up a tire. It didn't cost you anything because it was part of the service in service station. And I hadn't had to fool with one of those machines for several years. And I pulled up, and lo and behold, I don't know if it was COVID or inflation, but it went from being like 75 cents for the machine to being $2, $2.50 if you use a credit or debit card. And we pulled in at this one station, and it had gotten just brutally cold. I think it was 28 degrees. And I was short on quarters. And I went inside with my two $1 bills and looked at the woman behind the counter. I said, "May I please have $2 worth of quarters for the air compressor?" And she said, "Well, honey..." And this was about 11 o'clock. "Well, honey, I ain't got no quarters until the safe unlocks at midnight and I can get fresh change." And I'm not making any, apropos of nothing, there were a couple of guys in there who kept looking at your humble hostess. And while my Spanish ain't much, I can pick out the occasional adjective and the occasional noun. And I realized there was a machine gun Spanish conversation going on about yours truly. Sorry, I'm back home sneezing. So anyway, figuring I was going to have to go and find another gas station or whatever, and wondering when, you know. I got back out to the car, and bless her heart, Annette had dug around. She said, I got the quarters. Air up the tire. Which I then did. And we hurried away as quickly as we possibly could. And like I said, we arrived... We arrived in Bristol at the motel at about 11:30. We were completely exhausted. But in the interim, we had received a phone call from our son telling us of the arrival of our granddaughter, little Luna, born at 9:03 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. On the first day of November, 2023. 6 pounds, 15 ounces, 20 inches long. And for those of you who have seen the post on my Facebook page, born 99 years to the day after her great-grandfather. And while I tend not to believe in ghosties and whatnot, I couldn't help taking a moment just to look skyward and say, hi, Dad. You got another granddaughter. And it was just, and she's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. She looks decidedly like her father did at about the same age. And so the next day, yesterday, we got to go to the hospital there in Tennessee. And we got to visit little Luna for the first time. And the fact that she was born under... It was like the moon was so bright that night and the sky so clear. It was almost like more of the darkness of a solar eclipse than the darkness of night. And she's beautiful, just breathtakingly beautiful. Beautiful. And she has the sweetest little cry, but she's not fussy. And she hears voices, and she reaches toward the voices. And there's a certain symmetry to things. I'm going to get into the awful news of the day. And we'll talk about some of it when we get over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree. Randy Radar saying, born on All Saints Day? Not bad. Yeah, it was that, but most importantly to me, it was my father's birthday. And I don't know, apparently he was kindly disposed because the entire time I was there, he never threw anything down the front of my top or anything. But I love the roundness of a certain symmetry in my family, my birth family, everyone in my family, my mother, my father, all my siblings, were born in West Virginia. But I was born in Alabama. And now in that young family, everyone in that family, Mama, Daddy, her two sisters, were born in West Virginia. Only she's a little volunteer, born in Tennessee. And so I joked, Bridge Day here in West Virginia is the third Saturday in October. And I joked with her daddy, and I said, well, when she gets old enough, she and I have to be together every third Saturday in October. And Ferg looked at me and said, Bridge Day? I said, no. Alabama versus Tennessee. The Tide versus the Vols. And we'll as long as I'm around, we'll take in that game every third Saturday in October. And her little welcome basket included some a couple of little bibs done up in University of Tennessee colors, orange and white. And there's just something so extraordinary about that little life. Meanwhile, back at the house, Annette was helping out with Junebug and little Layla. And it was so good to see them, too. I brought in, Popeyes. There's no Popeyes up here. So I swung by Popeyes and got some mac and cheese and mashed potatoes and gravy, because, dirty little habit. And I sat down there at their house, and I had the mashed potatoes and gravy with me and a spoon. And Junebug ran over to me and just looked up at me like, how you doing? And she's walking really well now. And she didn't toddle so much as she just runs places. And she stood there and put her hand on mine and looked at those mashed potatoes and gravy as if to say, well, get with it. And so I put a little bit of mashed potatoes on the end of the spoon, and she went after it like a little raptor. That little girl is definitely related to me. And her eyes got big and round because that gravy, that Popeye's gravy, damn. And she kept looking at me like, more. So little Junebug and I had Popeye's mashed potatoes and gravy and had the best time doing it. Never enjoyed it so much in my entire life. And then this morning, we went over and aired the tire up again. I guess that's going to be an everyday thing until I can replace the wheel. It absolutely bedevils me how I managed to crack the wheel on that Ford Fusion. Because I generally try not to run around, just banging into things. But I did, somehow, some way. So that's just one of that. But nothing could get in the way of the joy. And she, little Luna arrived in a hurry. And Mama was in labor for about 4 hours. And Luna, In terms of serious labor and pushing and everything, Luna's about 5 minutes. Like, ta-da! And on top of it all, she has a beautiful head of dark red hair. And at least for the time being, and I think it'll stay that way. They'll stay that way. Blue eyes like her daddy and me. And it's almost like, it's kind of the way that buying a lottery ticket buys you a license to dream for a day or so that you might be just obscenely wealthy. Well, meeting my latest little granddaughter was an opportunity to look forward to the world that she will inhabit. She and her sisters most likely will all see the 22nd century as old women. And I can't help wondering what kind of world they will see. And I want it to be a better world. So very badly. Well, thank you. Clarence said, congratulations to you and your family and got us started this evening. And that brings us around. I got a little bit ahead of myself because I wanted to tell you about where I'd been and what I'd done. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, even if it happens 22 minutes late. And so thanks go out to our third day of the month, second day of the month, and first day of the month subscribers via PayPal. And so thank you to Gene and Ann across the pond. Thank you to John. Thanks so much to Elizabeth. And thanks. To Tom and Sunny San Rafael and Mark. Thanks to Joseph. Thanks as well to Brandon and Fennell in Brooklyn. So where we stand is we finished the month of October in a $1,600 deep hole. And this is the first broadcast of November 2023, so that means we have Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge, brought to you by Ralph's and Chris in Germany, to whom I send our fondest best wishes, and to an anonymous friend. And what that means is if we raise $300, it becomes six. And that reduces the deficit by that amount. And Clarence just jumped in with $25. And Max, thank you so much, Max. Jumped in and took care of two-thirds of that. So we're only $75 away from meeting Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. $75, and we get down to $1,000 in terms of the deficit. But it being Friday on the Front Porch, a Friday on the Front Porch Community Made Miracle would be a real big deal. And hopefully we can work on that. Thanks again, Clarence, and thanks again, Max, for getting us going. Ralph says, my usual offer of one-third of the first of the month challenge and plus $30 for little Luna. Well, thank you. Thank you, because, we tried to help as best we could when we got down there with some of the things that she needed. And we took little Sonic the Blue Parakeet down for them. We had been bird sitting since they moved down there. And kind of already we got back here and kind of already miss his peeping. Sweet little bird. Mr. Shadow was very happy to be home when we pulled up to our daughter's house. He came out and, you know, he was on a leash, and, but he knew exactly where to go. And I had the back door, the back passenger side door, the Fusion open, and he wasted no time. Laser beam focus, boom, boom, right into the back seat. And I thought I was going to get loved to death. He was so happy to see me and so happy to see Annette primarily. But me too. So all the way around, it's been a hectic couple of days. I very badly wanted to be on air this evening, and we managed to make it in time. So here we are. And like I said, if we can raise $75 more, we go from $1,600 to $1,000. And then we'll start working on catching up with the rest of October before November gets too far in and things get too desperate. So necessarily then, where to start? I could be a bit of a goof, I guess, and say, did I miss anything? Because I did, to a certain extent, try to I kind of turned the world off a little bit, because you do that when something as precious as a new little human is entering your life and your family. But there's really never any escaping it. And I was certainly unsuccessful. I followed the ongoing horror in that Levantine abattoir. Learned even more still about Mullah Mike Johnson and what a nightmare path he wants to lead this country down. Of course, it's no surprise considering for whom he worked before he ever got to Congress. It's quite disgusting, really. But along the way, and by the way, Beavis and Butthead went to court and testified that they didn't know nothing about running no businesses. Eric the Dumber said, poor concrete. Whereas Trader Tot, Nitwit Jr., said, I don't know nothing about no business. They said sign here, and I signed there. I don't know about no financial fraud, nor can nothing. Yet, meanwhile, precious Princess Iwankamadaddy Trump Kushner tried to get out of testifying, saying, "Well, I really can't be there. I don't live in New York anymore. And besides, it would be an undue hardship on me to come back to New York from Florida, where I live now, with my husband, Jared. Because, you see, I'm a mommy. And as a mommy, it would be horrible for me to have to leave Florida during a school week, because I have to get my children off to school every day." And no one believes that bullshit. Hey, our first brown word of the third day of November. Our first brown word of November on the program. Nobody believes that. Yeah, there she is. Yeah, I wank my daddy Trump Kushner. Hard-working mama. Barefoot with an apron on and pushing the stray hairs back up into her, back up above her hairline and back and twisting it back into the Appalachian psyche knot that she wears her hair in when she's slaving away over a hot pot of boiling pinto beans and pouring the cornbread into the iron skillet so that she can feed her brood. Oh, give me a break. But it's, noteworthy to point out that yet another maggot has gone off to prison. A maggot who participated in the domestic terrorist attack of January the 6th, 2021. A veteran, former member of the United States Marine Corps. Sorry, Mark. And was a political appointee to the State Department in the maggot administration. Federico Klein was a part of one of the single most violent moments in that terrorist attack, that day, which will live in infamy. He was a part of the massive hand-to-hand combat with besieged members of the Capitol Police as the maggots tried to overwhelm the police and get control of the tunnel entrance to the lower west terrace of the Capitol. Federico Klein continuously exhorted his fellow terrorists to get into the fight and went so far as to try to prevent police officers from closing the doors to that tunnel entrance. In their sentencing memo, the prosecutor said that he waged a relentless siege on police officers. His goal was to, with the other terrorists, was to prevent Congress from certifying the Electoral College victory of Joe Biden over Julius Geiser. Klein stood silent at his sentencing, just as he had chosen not to take the stand during his trial. Maggot Judge U.S. District Judge Trevor McFadden threw the book at him, telling Federico Klein, fellow maggot, along with Trevor McFadden, "Your actions on January 6th were shocking and egregious," and then ordered Klein to pay a $3,000 fine and $2,000 in restitution. Sentencing him to those 5 years and 10 months in federal prison, Trevor McFadden said, "We'll give you a date to report to prison at a later date." Prosecutors figured that Federico Klein, having been in the State Department Office of Brazilian and Southern Cone Affairs from 2017 until the day he resigned on January 19th, 2021, his actions were motivated by his desire to keep Nitwit Nero in office so he could keep his job, because it was a political appointment. In the sentencing memo, Prosecutors said, as an employee of the federal government, Klein was endowed with the trust of the American people and to uphold the law. He violated that trust on January 6th when he attacked the very country for which he was paid to work. His pettifogger said that the prosecution was blowing it all out of proportion just because he was a Trump appointee. And you may recognize this name, his pettifogger, Klein's pettifogger, was a dude by the name of Stanley Woodward. Oh, he does get around, doesn't he? He's one of the pettifoggers involved in the defense down at Mar-a-Lago, in the cases for the indicted co-conspirators, who, along with Nitwit Nero, tried to prevent the documents from the documents that Trump stole from being returned to the federal government. And Stanley Woodward said to, accordingly, Mr. Klein should be sentenced for his actual role in the events of the day and not the more egregious conduct of others with which the government would have Mr. Klein be found guilty by association.
No, he wasn't guilty by association. He was guilty for what he did, and that for which he was demonstrably a willing participant. But Trevor McFadden is a maggot judge, and so the prosecutors, the DOJ prosecutors, asked for 10 years behind federal prison bars for Federico Klein. But Trevor McFadden gave him 5 years and 10 months because, well, right. He was charged in a 53-count indictment that included 12 counts on which maggot Judge McFadden found him guilty. Six of those were assault charges. His co-defendant was Stephen Cappuccio, and Cappuccio was due to be sentenced later today. I don't have that story before me. But because Federico Klein's a maggot and because Trevor McFadden is a maggot, the quality of mercy is not strained with maggots. It falleth as the gentle rain of heaven. And so maggot Judge McFadden said to the terrorist Federico Klein, sure, you can stay on house arrest. But he sent Cappuccio straight to jail. I guess because Cappuccio wasn't actually a Trump appointee. Didn't know the secret handshake or nothing. It remains to be seen if Cappuccio will get the 10 years that prosecutors wanted, or get a nudge and a wink like Federico Klein did. And to be sure, rather than being convicted of what the prosecution thought others did, no, Federico Klein was among the first wave of terrorists to attack the Capitol and enter the tunnel. He pushed and shoved against the cops and yelled at them, "You can't stop this!" And then he took a police riot shield away from the cops and used it to wedge the gates so that the Capitol Police couldn't close the gates. with Klein all the time yelling to his fellow terrorists, "We need fresh people." Trevor McFadden trying to make a bit of a show of things said, "You prolonged the mayhem. You were front and center in that chaos." Yeah. Emilio said, $2,000 fine? Don't you mean $200,000 fine? No, Emilio, just $2,000, 2,000 paltry dollars. Emilio adding, "Hey, Robin, congratulations to you and your family for the new baby." Thank you, Emilio. So being a loyal maggot is apparently good for 4 years and 2 months off of a recommended felony rap. So he will be, depending on how it's all calculated, Klein will be about 50 years old when he gets out of federal prison, unless Nitwit Nero gets in. In which case, he'll probably get the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And I wish I was joking about that. But I'm not. Oh, no. Because, in point of fact, Nitwit Nero is referring to the terrorists who have been imprisoned thus far. Oh, this is so gross. He's saying people who have been imprisoned for attacking the Capitol, hostages. And in fact, in using that terminology, hostages, he's taking a cue from another maggot terrorist who said he is proud to go to prison and be a hostage of the U.S. government for standing up for freedom. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. He was at a rally in Houston. Tangerine Tiberius was. His crowds aren't what they once were. But nonetheless, the maggots assembled, hooted and brayed and cheered when he said,
"I call them the J6 hostages, not prisoners. I call them hostages, what's happened. And it's a shame."
Hostages. He is literally equating the terrorists who attacked the very idea of constitutional governance in the United States of America and the peaceful transfer of power to people presently being held against their will in Gaza by Hamas. Hostages. And along the way at this filthy little Clavern rally, they played They played the recording by the J6 Prison Choir at this disgusting display in Houston. Justice for All, the name of the song. In the recording, Nitwit Nero, you may recall, recites the Pledge of Allegiance. And then the terrorists imprisoned now sing the Star-Spangled Banner. They did that at the beginning of the disgusting display. And Nitwit Nero, knowing he was in the heart of insurrectionist attitudes, stood and saluted while they played the video. Absolutely, beyond a shadow of a doubt, just sickening. And it didn't go over too well on my filthy morning habit. Yeah, I thought the MSNBC Morning Zoo crew was gonna plumb have a baby, and rightfully so. Don't get me wrong.
For a rally, Trump took the stage to a version of the national anthem recorded by imprisoned January 6th rioters. He then said this.
Well, thank you very much. And you know what that was?
That was, I call them the J6 hostages. Not prisoners. I call them the hostages, what's happened. And it's a shame.
So, Joe, there's Donald Trump calling the people who attacked the United States Capitol, who beat up police officers with American flags, who desecrated the People's House, calling them hostages.
And it just shit on the floor.
I have to say, as a patriotic person, to watch the president of the United States, the former president, stand there in front of American flags, saluting that group of people who were in jail for what they did on January 6th. It's pretty repulsive.
Well, and if you ask the families of the four police officers who died, they will tell you it was those people responsible for their deaths. So those people that took American flags that our servicemen and women have taken into battle for centuries to defend freedom here and across the world, they use those flags as instruments of death, hoping to kill officers, and as you said, desecrated the People's House. And these are the people who tried to overthrow American democracy because they believed Donald Trump's lies. They believed Donald Trump's lies. And there we have police officers being attacked from all sides, having...
That's one... Because they believed Donald Trump's lies. And it's all well and good to let those chickens come home to roost on Nitwit Nero. But there's more to it than that. You could believe his lies, but that did not automatically mean that you went to Washington, D.C. and participated in an attempt to overthrow the government. They had, the maggot terrorists did, I think we have to acknowledge, they had their very own depraved hearts to motivate them. That's not to take anything away from the ugliness of Nitwit Nero's exhortation to treason. But it's not as though they were hypnotized. They acted of their own free will. In the video that they showed this morning, that we've all seen time and time again, There are hundreds of people trying to force their way into that tunnel. And they're not automatons. They are human beings acting of their own free will in support of a man who wanted to be dictator. It is, I understand what Scarborough is saying, but it sells these terrorists short. It sells their evil short to say that they were powerless and acting without their own will.
Their heads crushed indoors, police officers taken to the ground, having bear spray used against them. This is just pure evil. And speaking of that, how deeply offensive that Donald Trump has now moved from calling these people these thugs. He's gone from calling them political prisoners to now comparing them to Jews who were ripped out of their homes. And believe you me, there was no mistake. Jews ripped out of their homes on January the 7th, tortured, raped,
October, Joe.
Beaten up, bludgeoned, grandmothers thrown on the back in the back of pickup trucks and taken underground by Hamas terrorists. And they're the hostages. The whole world are talking about the hostages, Jonathan Lemire. And Donald Trump uses this time to compare those thugs that were beating up police officers with American flags to compare them to Jews who were ripped from their homes, raped, beaten, so many killed, but also so many taken to underground tunnels by a terrorist organization.
Yeah, Trump's comments would be deeply offensive at any time, but particularly now, considering the uncertain fate of those hostages in Gaza at this moment, to appear at this rally with a song sung by a January 6th convict choir to suggest yet again that were he to be reelected president, he would pardon most of them, to let them get out. And certainly, Joe and Willie, you guys know we talk about it a lot, the threat of political violence that surrounds this year's election and how law enforcement feels that it will be a staple of elections to come. And they have expressed some relief that there hasn't been that much yet, knock on wood, in part because some of the most potentially violent offenders are locked up. There are these Trump supporters who were arrested and convicted and imprisoned after January 6th. Well, if Donald Trump has his way in a year, year and a half or so, a lot of them will be back on the streets again, potentially to commit more acts of violence.
Yeah, he said he will pardon them, and think of the signal that sends to other people considering political violence if he becomes president. We have just crossed.
Sometimes the analysis is so obvious that you can't help but have more than one person make it. But make no mistake, given the opportunity, if he gets back into office, they'll all be pardoned. They'll all be turned out of their just and much deserved incarceration that for many of them was reduced by a maggot judge in the first place. It's disgusting.
Over at the Bulwark today, Charlie Sykes, a conservative, posted an article noting something that he said was an almost prophetic warning from the framers of the Constitution about a person exactly as awful as Nitwit Nero. It's a letter written by Alexander Hamilton, who brayed a lot about civic virtue and the like at the same time that he was an entirely unscrupulous man himself. Maybe he recognized the possibility. Yeah, he was a philanderer, among other things. Married for money. Married a member of the Schuyler family of New York, who were one of the families of New York. So he may have been looking within himself when he wrote, "When a man unprincipled in private life, desperate in his fortune, bold in his temper, possessed of considerable talents, having the advantage of military habits, despotic in his ordinary demeanor, known to have scoffed in private at the principles of liberty, when such a man is seen to mount the hobby horse of popularity, to join in the cry of dangers to liberty, to take every opportunity of embarrassing the general government and bringing it under suspicion, to flatter and fall in with all the nonsense of the zealots of the day, it may justly be suspected that his object is to throw things into confusion, that he may ride the storm and direct the whirlwind." It fairly describes Clementine Caligula. Charlie Sykes, in his article, said that the founders and the framers would have recognized Nitwit Nero right away. "If the founders are, in fact, watching all of this, I imagine that George Mason would like to have a word with James Madison." Because it was George Mason who resisted the idea of giving the presidential pardon to the chief executive. And it is not unreasonable to think that, in fact, he will pardon everyone who tried to overthrow the government on his behalf. And I mentioned Mullah Johnson. And by the way, we should probably go ahead and connect to the Skype group. Because, we're an hour into the program. But I got some, it's going to be, like I said, a steady drip, drip, drip of just horrible revelations of just how truly, genuinely, hideously awful Mullah Mike is. Well, we know now that before he went to Congress back in 2014, and this had some resonance for me, because it's reminiscent of another mild-mannered seeming individual that I've mentioned on this program, one of the most toxic Republicans in the West Virginia legislature, a disgusting creature named Tom Fast, who now has decided he wants to be a circuit judge in my county. Tom Fast, as I have mentioned in the past, tormented a couple
two women, who were expert in foster caring for at-risk newborns. And at one point in time, earlier in this century, he tormented the couple, saying that the at-risk newborn should be cared for by a heterosexual couple because even a newborn needs a father figure in its life. And he so thoroughly trashed them that eventually he only stopped when the Supreme Court of Appeals of the state of West Virginia said, "Stop or we will make you stop," and threatened his law license. Well, it was 2014 when Mullah Mike, before he entered Congress, represented the state of Louisiana stand as it tried to keep a woman from adopting her own wife's biological son. Eventually, the case was mooted out because of the Supreme Court decision in Obergefell. He also tried, on behalf of Louisiana Stan, to keep the parents, same-sex couples, from appearing together on a child's birth certificate. That's curious because it almost seems prophetic, in that the now fascist state of Italy, their horrid fascist premier has spearheaded an effort to remove same-sex parents from children's birth certificates. Caroline Saccone, president of Accountable.us, in an exclusive to USA Today, said, "Mullah Mike's legal background reveals even more about where his true allegiances lie, and that as Speaker, he hopes to force a far-right agenda on everyday Americans." Something wicked this way comes. Yes? Yes. And there's more and more and more. Todd, with a note, asking, "Did you see how disheveled and out of sorts Donnie Deutsch was on a recently passed Morning Jehoshaphat?" Some people did. "He's all on board for collective punishment with no qualms. Remember, he was the MILF's buddy for quite a while before it became clear that the MILF, mentally ill fascist, was dangerous when wielding power." "It's only documented," Todd says. Yeah, you're right. He was looking a little rough, for sure. Thank you, Christopher. Christopher said, "Congratulations, Robin. So wonderful to hear your brand new granddaughter is so beautiful and healthy. Enjoy the time with the whole family. I'm out and about today celebrating my 52nd. Well, happy birthday, Christopher. Very bittersweet because my mom's is 11, too. And her memory flooded my brain for the entirety of yesterday. Today's just going to get a little sauced and stewed. Happy Friday, everyone, for Horn Family NBA fans. Can anyone explain the in-season tournament? I'm lost.
Well, you have just lit the bat signal, as it were, Christopher. Perhaps someone will be able to. Wrong girl to ask. And thank you so much to Dave and the blind. Congratulations, Luna. Welcome to the world and to your lucky parents and grandparents. Glad to have you here. And so we're down to $50 to go on Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Dave. And thank you for the goodness of your heart. So let me go over to the old holler tree for a minute. We'll be going to the old holler tree momentarily. And there we are. Hey, Roger.
Hello.
Oh, wait a minute. There, I think you're in. Sometimes the cord's a little weird.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good. Nice. Not too bad out, huh?
Oh, it's... it was brutally...
Compared to what we've had.
It was brutally cold when we came into the house because, you know, no central heat and can't leave the space heaters running because we'd like to not come home to a pile of ashes, but... we had a beautiful day, a beautiful night to drive down to Tennessee, and a beautiful day for driving back. And it looks like here it's just going to be sunshine and gorgeousness for the next 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, up here too. It's going to be okay. It's been a little chilly lately up here, but and rainy. But looking good for the next few days. Got a football party Sunday. One of my carriers that I work with, we do it once a year, every year, like usually the first Sunday in November at his house. And he's got like a big garage and he's got all the TVs in there and everybody brings something to eat. I want to make a bacon wrap meatloaf.
Well, that sounds yummy.
Yeah. I just kind of mishmash, whatever, you know, I get the veal beef, pork mix. I usually make like a 5 pound thing of it. Get the nice thick bacon and the barbecue sauce, you know, the whole night. It's always goes over well. Everybody else brings stuff.
I love a good meatloaf.
Yeah. And we got a grill there too, you know, so we just actually grill stuff right there too. So nice little mix of you know, grill stuff and cooks, you know, indoor cooked stuff. So, and you get some retirees show up for as well. So it's always nice to catch up with people. So anyway, weather's supposed to be pretty good. The last few years it's been cold there, and he's got one of those indoor fireplace things you can put in your garage, you know, one of those round things there, and a torpedo heater or something like that. So we were kind of huddled in there last couple of years, but I think this year we can be outside a little more, a little longer anyway, and, you know, enjoy that. So, my woeful Patriots are playing at 1 o'clock. Cowboys are playing at 4. So we got,
have they added an adjective to Patriots now? The woeful Patriots.
Oh my God, they're terrible. They're like the Patriots when I grew up.
Yeah, granted, they're bad. They're bad.
Oh, yeah, Mac Jones. I feel. What do you think, Robin? You been watching much of it? Or
yeah, I mean, I've seen. You said woeful. I was thinking hapless.
You think it's all his fault, though? I don't think so.
No team fails on the shoulders of one individual.
Yeah. I mean, he had a good rookie year, actually. They did pretty well his first year. And then last year, for whatever reason, and maybe because his name is Bill Belichick and he's, you know, almighty God, that, you know, he picks Matt Patricia, defensive coordinator, to be offensive coordinator. And everybody said, oh, my God, look at the genius Belichick. No, that didn't go over too well.
No.
Anyway, I'm kind of.
But Boston sports fans just crack me up. Yeah. Not to be cruel or anything, but.
But we were suffering. Remember, hey, I suffered. I mean, other than the Celtics.
Yeah, I know.
Red Sox, Patriots. Yeah, but I'll tell you what, man. For what they've done the last 20 years, I'm satisfied. I could be, you know, especially after 2003 when Aaron Boone hit the walk-off against Tim Wakefield in the ALCS. And Yankees beat the Red Sox again. I'm like, okay, it's done. I'm like, we're never going to win. And then what happens? The following year, 2004, they pull it off with the miracle. But, you know, anyway, I'm happy. You know, Patriots won quite a few. Red Sox won, what, four? And I thought I'd never see them win one. So, you know what? I'm not complaining, Robin. You know, if they never win another one again.
No. Well, I mean, but they are. They will. It's just going to be a little bit. I think there's some retooling going on. So, can you answer?
All right,
do you follow the NBA?
Kind of, yeah.
Can you explain the
NBA? That tournament thing? I heard about it. I haven't really taken a good, solid look at what the purpose is other than what? To win some trophy? I don't know. I have no idea what it's all about.
Maybe somebody will sort it out through the course of the program.
I don't think it has anything to do with the playoffs or anything like that. It's too early in the season.
Well, yeah.
I think it's just for money, right? It's in Vegas, right? I guess. Like fans go to Vegas to watch their team play. I did hear about it, like, over the summer, but I haven't paid much attention to it. But I know it's coming up, right? December, right? Or is it this month?
I'm not at all sure, because to the extent I follow hoops, I follow college hoops. Not a big NBA fan.
Yeah.
And, of course, tomorrow should be interesting, switching gears again. For the first time ever, the BYU Cougars visit Mountaineer Field.
Morgan?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Wow. BYU.
I saw one meme earlier that showed some guys with white short sleeve shirts and skinny dark ties and dark trousers on one side of the table, and some guys dressed up in WVU gear sitting on the other side of the table and says, if we win, they have to drink. If they win, we get baptized.
Well, they had, was it Jim Kelly and Jim McMahon, right? Brigham Young?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Right?
Right.
They had some good teams back in the 80s. Remember the...
Oh, LaVell Edwards was a genius.
Yeah. Yeah. I that was fun watching them back then. I loved watching Brigham Young back then. That whole conference back then was a lot of fun to watch. Air Force, you know, anyway. All right, I got to shut the car off. I'm going to go in the house and I'll reconnect.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, I'll see you guys in a little bit. All right, bye.
Bye. Yeah. Let's see. I see Steve in the room. Are you participating, Steve?
Me, Steve, or Steve from Georgia?
You, Steve. Steve from Georgia isn't in the room.
Oh, okay. I'm actually not. I can't see who's in the room. I'm looking at something. I'll participate a little bit. I've been kind of out of it the last few days. Focused on the new job, the potential move. Even though I'm getting a new job, I'm still in this partnership, so I still have to bring in business for the partnership. Working a full-time job to make as much money as I can to, you know, do what I need to do. So right now my days are just insane. I'm behind. I need to file shit. I'm weeks behind on things. You know, my anxiety for some reason, which I do not know, is through the roof. Weird dreams. And I won't kid you, this stuff in the Middle East, Robin.
I know.
How I keep asking myself, what's enough? What is fucking
enough? You know it is bad, and this is going to come across poorly, I suppose. I don't know of a good way to say it, but you know it's bad when the Israel Uber Allah's Biden administration says, y'all better slow down or it's going to get it. Because now the Biden administration, and, you know, Anthony Blinken is over there in Israel. He gave an address today. And he made a point of talking about saying, you know, I've seen the videos that no one's seen, blah, 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 blah. And discussed the horrors that were visited upon Israelis. And which I do not dispute, and I don't think anybody in their right mind disputes. Or disputes the wrongness of what Hamas did. But warning that to the extent that there are nations that are sympathetic to what Israel went through, the sympathy is running thin because it's abundantly obvious that, and I hate talking about this, because it never does anything but divide the community. But there is no doubt but that this is this is a war crime at this point, what's going on in Gaza. It's disproportionate. It's collective punishment of innocent civilians, no matter how many is members of the, and I think the war, it's, if it were anybody but Israel, it would be actionable in the International Criminal Court. And Bibi Netanyahu would be in the dock. Just like, you know, who was it? Slobodan Milosevic? And the people who perpetrated the horrors in Sarajevo? Because, you know, bombing somebody who didn't flee southward, and by the way, they're bombing in the south too, because, you know, there are a few elderly people in Gaza. It's really hard to become an elderly person in Gaza. But there are people who simply cannot leave, and so I guess they just get to die in some sort of act of retribution for the actions of Hamas. And you know, to warn Israel that they're on the verge of losing the goodwill of the world is profound for the United States. And then there's Mullah Mike Johnson, Steve, who went ahead with his threat and tied Israeli aid to cuts to the Inflation Reduction Act. I mean, there's no nexus. Is there? And did it any?
I actually thought I heard that there was a clean bill. Was I wrong in that?
Maybe I missed it today. There wasn't as of yesterday that I'm aware of.
I thought that I heard that there was a clean bill. I'm gonna mute because I have one of those clicking keyboards, so I'm gonna research it. But
okay, clack away.
Yeah,
but
I believe there was a clean bill that came out of the Senate, but the one out of the House was funding it by reducing the funding for the IRS.
Yes,
that's what came out of the
House.
And
the Biden administration said, you know, we will veto that. The president will veto any such bill,
And frankly, the twisted thinking of the maggots in the House is, well, that's cool, because then we'll blame Biden for not supporting Israel.
But then again, you need to figure out why it's being tied to a defunding of the IRS.
Because, and it's, the IRS funding has nothing to do with pursuing tax cheats or anything like that. It's merely administrative. It's just expanding capacity in an antiquated system. But the maggots feel they're eaten alive, and they're just stewing in their own paranoia, Roger.
But when you've got, what, I think it's 15 years of disclosure documentation from a member of the House of Representatives that claims to not have any bank account activity in excess of $5,000 when you're being paid $174,000 a year, is rather ludicrous. So where is the money being hidden? Now, a financially strapped Internal Revenue Service that doesn't have the resources to investigate people in that kind of a thing, might it not be beneficial to continue the IRS being strapped so they can't investigate high-income earners who don't report having any bank accounts?
He hid it in his Bible. But I think Roger's thinking too much. This is purely an ideological thing. That's all this is. And remember what you said, Robin, that they never really wanted to elect a speaker. This is another way to say, look, we're doing something without actually doing something.
Well, yeah, and that looms in the background. I may yet not be wrong.
Oh, you're going to be right about Jenny Thomas, too, being co-conspirator number 6.
You think?
The sharks are – she is there was something that recently came out, and I was like, oh, my God. Anyway, getting back to what Roger was saying, I just – Roger would be right if these were rational people, but they're not. It's purely ideological. Because you know what? Let's be frank and honest here. Putting aside whether you agree with sending more money to Israel,
right?
It is not popular, and it's getting less and less popular.
Well, what I continue to fail to see, and I know that's sort of tormented structuring. But nobody's talking about the fact that the beneficiary of this isn't Bibi Netanyahu, and it's not Hamas, and it's not Iran. It's Vladimir Putin. And I think if we could get our heads around that, we would understand the entire picture eminently more clearly. Because while at least Mullah Mike and his cronies put forward a bill of some sort to support Israel. I'm sorry, I mispronounced it. Israel. But they haven't put forward shit to support the people who are actually defending democracy on a global basis. And by that, I mean Ukraine. Israel's fight against Hamas and Hezbollah and whatever, that's their fight. I mean, that's a fight they've been fighting since 1948, on and off. I'm not dismissing it, but it is not a fight to defend democracy against the forces of global fascism. That is Ukraine. Because if Ukraine falls, then it's Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Finland, Poland. And even though Vladdy Daddy's been bloodied up plenty good, he still has the same ambitions. But the House hasn't put together a single thin dime of what the Biden administration asked for. I don't know. Maybe that's their next step. Okay, we'll give $3.16 to Ukraine, but we're going to have to zero out the entirety of the Inflation Reduction Act to do it. It's transparently transactional. It's performative AF. But again, no one's talking about the fact that the beneficiary is Putin. I mean, I'm sure Bibi Netanyahu wants more bombs and guns and rockets and missiles and whatnot. Because, you know, what country wouldn't like to have free armaments? But it doesn't inure to his benefit beyond the mere transactional. Supporting Ukraine, defending Ukraine, or making it possible for Ukraine to defend itself does inure to the benefit of the world of democracy, quote unquote, on a global basis. And it's being entirely lost in the shuffle. And it's shameful. Steve, it's just shameful.
I agree.
And at the risk of, I don't want to alienate any members of this community, but and I welcome all points of view. But like the story over the last few days of people tearing down hostage posters that were posted by activists here in the United States. I'm sure you've heard about that, right, Steve?
Was that in New York? Because I actually walked out of the subway the other day, and there was a number of posters.
Yes. And so the question becomes, And I've heard it discussed on various news programs, you know, that it's somehow wrong for anyone to tear those posters down. Is there some impression that some of the Hamas hostages are being held in New York City or anywhere in the United States for that matter? You know, busted knuckle Alabama? Because, again, putting those posters up in New York or anywhere else is just performative. You know, where those posters really need to go up is in Gaza City or anywhere else in Gaza.
I mean, I don't.
I mean, I remember you're old enough. I'm old enough, and older members of this community are certainly old enough to remember how Nightline was born. ABC's Nightline, Ted Koppel. Nightline was born out of the Iranian hostage crisis, and so every day there would be some kind of coverage and some mention of the American hostages being held, presumably in Tehran. And, you know, if there was actual information in the broadcast about where the situation stood, good. And not forgetting them, good. But in the end, it wound up being nothing but an attempt to, or a facilitation of, a portrayal of the supposed weakness of Jimmy Carter, whose attempts to bring the hostages home were undermined by all of that propaganda. And, you know, the U.S. multimillionaire for-profit media can certainly be guilty of propaganda. And so posting those flyers feels like propaganda. It's a way of stirring up anti-Palestinian hate. because one of the things that you are beginning to see now is that Jewish college students are saying we don't feel safe, and their Palestinian equals are saying neither do we.
I'm going to disagree with you here. That doesn't happen very often. I don't find it performative. I find it as, and pardon me everybody, if I start sobbing, you have to please understand this has been on my, for whatever, I don't know why this has been so on my mind, but it has. People have their own ways of coping. I may not understand. I may find it weird. I may find it silly. I think what those posters up, and I suspect that those posters are probably people who are either New Yorkers, native New Yorkers who live in Israel or have family in Israel, or they are the family of people here. And there probably is a, and justifiable or not, a fear that people will forget. So, you know, I've come to conclude, you know, if, I mean, all kinds of questions have been roaming around in my mind, and I don't like the conclusions I've come to on a lot of things. But this has the feel of nobody knows what to do. Nobody knows how to act or react. Nobody knows. And I think the sad thing about it here in the U.S., we get a completely unbalanced view. And I think that people are doing what they can. And I think the sad thing is, and if I'm going all over the place, I apologize. What is happening to a lot of Jewish folks is what's happening to a lot of Arab and Palestinian. I hate using the term Palestinian, Arab, and Muslim interchangeably, because there are non-Arab Palestinians.
Right. That doesn't work.
Yeah, there are non-Muslim Arabs. There are Jewish Arabs, Christian Arabs, and there's a considerable Christian community in Gaza.
Yes. They're getting bombed too.
The problem is it's always the error, at least in the, I'll say in the U.S., it's often the ignorant who conflate what a government does to what it imputes what its government does to its people, or it sees, in the case of Israel and Jewish people, they see Israel and a Jewish person, and they're all interchangeable, which is something that is, because as far as I'm concerned, on anything like this, the only people who are to blame are the people who are fucking doing it. So Netanyahu and his genuine, and I'm not using this as a almost a slang term. He is a fascist. People in his cabinet are more than fascists. They are bona fide Nazis. If you look at some of the shit that they're saying, these IDF people are just. I don't want to say anything about the IDF.
Well, yeah, hold on, because generally speaking, in Israel, the tech sector and the IDF are more secular than religiously insane. But Bibi Netanyahu's government, for as far as I can tell, is one beard and some headgear different from, you know, it's a different beard and different headgear different from the Iranian mullahs.
Certainly in their actions.
They are radical right-wing religious extremists.
And I don't even think that even... To me, that doesn't...
It's not sufficient.
I think the big problem is that people are equating their disgust and frustration with the government of Israel with on-the-ground Jews, on-the-ground Israelis, there, and regular Jewish folk here, which is fucking ridiculous. I don't care how Zionist a Jew may be here, they are not the Netanyahu government, and they are not doing this. And if you get beneath the surface, what you find out is there's an awful lot of Israeli Jews and Israeli Zionists and Jew, you know, all of it, who are like, fucking stop this. My understanding is there's I don't know how many of them, but there's a significant number of families of the hostages who are saying, stop this. I mean, we also need
to look at how unpopular Netanyahu was prior to October 7th, and how any nation rallies behind the government when they've been attacked. But I think Netanyahu's days are incredibly numbered over what's going on. And just as you're saying, Steve, the incredible amount of Israeli people I know of, and my niece's husband is Israeli, are totally opposed to what's going on, totally opposed to what Netanyahu's doing, and are just as dismayed as we who are not of Israeli persuasion are about this whole situation. I mean, it's like there may not be any one right way to do it, but there's definitely a wrong way.
Which is what's going on.
Right. And the wrong way is being pounded on by both sides. I mean, I hate to be a both-siders person, but what Hamas did was atrocious. What Netanyahu is doing is atrocious. And Netanyahu has totally fucked it over with the West Bank, because had he not been so hell-bent on all the settlements and the ripping off of Palestinians in the West Bank, that could have been a demonstration on how, yes, we are interested in trying to coexist and live peacefully. But the Netanyahu government, with the fascists in his cabinet, have exacerbated the problem even on the West Bank in screwing this whole thing up.
Well, and take it back further than that, Roger. This all only happens. Hamas only happens because and only gets as strong as it does and has the resources that it does, because Bibi Netanyahu made it happen. It was Bibi Netanyahu who went to his own government and says, listen, you got to get behind me on this. We're going to let $1 billion go from Qatar to Gaza, and we're going to make sure that Hamas becomes the government of Gaza, to weaken the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, and keeping those two at each other's throats will make sure that there is never a two-state solution. Because Bibi Netanyahu has always been fascistly opposed to a two-state solution for Palestine. And so that's the only thing that lets this all happen. The genesis of all this, no pun intended, is Bibi Netanyahu's fascist hang-ups with making sure that the Palestinian people remain oppressed and immiserated. I don't think I'm getting this wrong. I mean, these are things that Haaretz and the Jerusalem Post have both complained about. And there should be a reckoning.
I don't think you're getting it wrong either. I don't think you're getting it wrong either, Robin. It is a mess that has been generated and created and exacerbated by various governments on all sides. And it's almost to the point now where, well, shit, let them fight it out till nobody's alive, and then we can declare that area vacant and let whoever wants to live there live there. I'm very distressed, disappointed, upset with this whole thing, because there's no answer to the problem with the present actors involved.
Right. And, for anyone who continues to persist in saying that this is entirely a Hamas problem, they're not even looking at the situation on the ground. Or the situation as it has been over the course of years, over a decade. Nearly two decades, because it goes back to 2006.
Alexa,
you can also go back to the original 1947, when a bunch of white people in Europe, particularly the British,
Alexa,
along with others, took out a Sharpie and drew a bunch of lines in a piece of the desert that happened to have the home of the major religions,
Alexa,
and drew some artificial boundaries.
Bedroom lights on.
Hey, Jeremy, your mic's open for you when you're talking to Alexa.
Well, my bad.
You can, but I think that leads down a troublesome path, to say the very least, because then you have to go back to the Balfour Declaration, and then the next thing you know, you're back in the Ottoman Empire, and then you leave the Ottoman Empire, and you're somewhere back in the Old Testament, you're in the Quran, and then you're in the Old Testament.
Anyhow,
but I mean, your point's well taken, but among other things, Bibi Netanyahu seems to think that he can bomb his way to success. And if he was paying attention to, say, what the United States did in, Fallujah? Or any of a number of other Iraqi cities and towns? House-to-house fighting is brutal and ugly. And ultimately, that's the only way they're going to clear Hamas out, and they're going to, and in the meantime, they're just killing civilians. And if
I remember CNN going wall to wall a while back, several years back, with the shock and awe campaign.
Lord, yes. And
nobody was calling for a war crimes tribunal. In the media, anyhow, the talking heads on the media weren't talking about, well, he should be up before the World Court in Geneva or Denmark, or wherever the hell they have the World Court,
The Hague,
over what the shock Bush did with shock and awe. But all of a sudden, they're screaming that Bibi Netanyahu ought to be brought up to The Hague. This is just ever so frustrating. Ever so fresh.
Can I just say something about that? And we talked about this previously. Netanyahu cannot, the Hague, the ICC does not have jurisdiction over him.
No. No, they
unless
don't.
Unless he's captured in a country that is a signatory. You had mentioned what was happening in Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia was before the with Milosevic was before the International Criminal Court.
Right.
There was actually a special tribunal called the International Court, the International Criminal Tribunal for Yugoslavia, much like the one for Nazi Germany, and then there was one for the Japanese. So that's what that was. I think this is I if you want to see what's going to happen if Trump gets reelected, Netanyahu is showing you.
Yeah.
He is.
Oh,
doing...
Oh, wait a minute. That is really astute.
Because
he'll get the bit in his teeth and do as he pleases.
And he will. And what gets like Roger said, what gets a country to rally around whoever it is, an enemy, an attack. Something like that. Now, would actually people rally around Trump? No, I don't think so. Other than his own maggots, but that's the paradigm that people he won't see that, but that's the paradigm people will tell him. But this is first of all. And I've come to think that the hostages are nothing more than a pawn in Netanyahu's desire to keep this going because he wants to stay out of jail. Because the minute those hostages came home alive, what is the real reason to continue the massacre? There isn't one. Because people are going to see this has nothing to do with you know, okay, this has nothing to do with getting Hamas. Because you know what? If that's what it were about, they would go there to get Hamas. Because what have we been –
Bingo,
what have
they, bingo. The duck just dropped, okay?
Because what is one of the things that Israel has told us is that that Shin Bet and the Mossad and all their intelligence agencies know where they are. Well, we know they're there. That's a tunnel there. They're using that tunnel. That's where they are. That's their headquarters.
Bingo.
If that were really the fucking case, then they go, okay, we're going to send the IDF. We're going to send troops in there to go get the fuckers and bring them out. That's exactly what they did with Adolf Eichmann in Argentina. That's exactly what the U.S. should have done in Argentina. And remember this, folks, we had Bin Laden, et cetera, surrounded at Tora Bora, and much like Bibi pulled the troops to the West Bank, dick fuck fuck nuts from Bush and Cheney pulled troops
you mean
out
dick,
of
– you mean Dick Cheney before he dicks us? Count Dickula?
Exactly. Remember, they had Tora Bora surrounded, except they pulled the troops out to go to Iraq. They knew where they were.
Mm-hmm.
Netanyahu knows where they are. Well, he says he knows where
well,
they are.
Well, I want you to back up just for a minute, because you hit something there, and you kind of – you didn't breeze past it, but it was part of a larger point. We know these tunnels – are terrorist warrens. And Randy Radar just said, isn't that a portion of the reason that Hamas is terrorist because Gaza is not a state? Otherwise, it would be two states going after each other in a war. Yeah, kind of. And, no, you know, the Palestinian Authority over in the West Bank. But hold on. I mean, we got a really good exchange going here. You live in New York, Steve, at least for now. I say that based on your email that I shared the other night.
Mm-hmm.
Much like an iceberg, the part of New York that you see above the ground, the skyscrapers and whatnot, tells only part of the story. And what I mean by that is
there's a lot of underground, too. Take Columbia New York Presbyterian Hospital. You suppose that Columbia New York Presbyterian Hospital has a basement, maybe even a sub-basement or a sub-sub-basement? Almost guarantee it. Remember the first time that Al-Qaeda tried to bring down the Twin Towers in 1993? Remember how they did it?
Yep. They put the explosives in the parking garage.
Which was under the World Trade Center? It takes a lot of substructure to hold up a tall building. So why wouldn't hospitals in Gaza have substructure? You were a legislative aide in Washington D.C.
I was just thinking about all the tunnels.
Yeah, how does a member of Congress get from the Cannon House office building to the floor of the House on, say, a rainy, shitty day in Washington D.C.
or any day?
But how?
Go to the tunnel and take that little subway if you want to, or just walk.
Yeah. Are those terrorist warrens? No. They are structural. They are part of the structural integrity of the complex. But because they're in Gaza, they're terrorist warrens. And so while, and I noticed this earlier today as I was preparing to leave Tennessee, the Hamas blew its own hospital up with a rocket. Because that's how Hamas is. And then today I hear them saying, yeah, well, these hospitals all have tunnels under them because Hamas hides under the hospitals. You know, two things can be true at the same time. Maybe Hamas does. But maybe if you're a hospital in, I don't know, a frequently bombed place like Gaza, maybe having sub-basements is a good place to take your patients to keep them from getting blown into a red mist the next time Israel decides to launch some missiles. Maybe it's a place for people to go and hide. I grew up in an era, I know Roger did, where there were fallout shelters in case the Reds decided to push the button down. And as often as not, you tried to have those be underground to protect you against the radiation. Some of this just seems transparently fabricated talking point. The other thing I wanted to raise, though, was something that you also touched on. And that is that sooner or later, you have to stop bombing and start fighting. And I think this is the one thing that gives Bibi Netanyahu, psychopath that he is, the turtle squirts. Because he was in horrible, horrible trouble only a month before all of this went down. He's one of the biggest beneficiaries of this. Personally, kind of the way Putin is, because he went from a point where the IDF reserves were saying, we will not show up if called, if you go through with this ham-fisted, no pun intended, this ham-fisted power grab to reservists leaving the United States of America because they were on business or whatever, to get on the first flight home to Israel. That's a huge win for him. But the problem is, the Israelis can watch Gaza be reduced to rubble, and the Palestinians, to use a term, pushed into the sea. And you're right. Some of the more secular Israelis are sickened by it. But the one place that Bibi is terrified to go is to look at the IDF and say, man up. and send them walking through the streets of Gaza City and actually having to fight to eliminate Hamas once and for all. Because that's going to be bloody and that's going to be ugly. You know, anybody with a working knowledge of World War II and, say, the fighting on Okinawa or the house-to-house fighting that took place once we crossed the Rhine into Germany in German cities knows how ugly and bloody that is and deadly. And the secular, I think this was one of the things that horrified Dim Leader once he started his war of choice against the innocent people of Iraq, was people coming home in body bags. Do you recall back then how the Bush administration tried to make sure that there was no media coverage of American KIAs coming home to Delaware in body bags, or in the early days of the war, in cardboard boxes? They did everything in their power to prevent that. And I don't know if anybody else has ever picked up on it, but this is also a point to be discussed. Why is there a media blackout in Gaza? Media are not allowed in Gaza. They are not allowed in Gaza by the Israeli government. Why? Because it's too dangerous for war correspondents? That's kind of part of the job description of war correspondent, isn't it?
And there was also the silencing of all internet.
Mm-hmm.
And cell phones and all the rest of it.
So why does a free and open democracy need to resort to that sort of thing? By the way, I need to send thank yous out to Colin. Colin finished off Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. Thank you so much, Colin. And so that means we're down to a $1,000 deficit from last October. I didn't even include today in the goal. We've got about an hour to try to make up some ground there, if we can. And it would be great if we could, because this is one of those points where it just gets difficult, extremely difficult, because we've reached cold weather, and that means that clean coal-fried electricity is going to break me. And, you know, probably before noon tomorrow, I'll be calling the parts department at my local Ford dealership to find out how much that damn wheel costs. Oh, and the engine light came on. Something to do with a vacuum sensor and the fuel rail and Jesus. That's what happens when you get north of 112,000 miles or whatever. Sorry to even mention it, but y'all know that's how this program exists.
Well, I sympathize with you, Robin. This last week, my check engine light came on, and by the time I got done with the shop, I got to give them $1,400.
Yeah. Which car did it come on in?
Oh, my Nissan pickup.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
225,000 miles, and I'm looking for a new vehicle, but they don't make the one I want anymore by anybody, either in internal combustion engine or electric.
That's a giant ouch.
I want a two-door, two-seat, relatively long bed, small pickup. You know, like a 2022 Nissan Frontier.
Yeah, that doesn't exist anymore, does it?
Nope. They're all four-door with a dashboard that looks like you're driving a spaceship.
Now, in a larger frame, you can still get that in like a Ram. Long bed, traditional cab, bench seat.
Unless you want to buy used.
Really? That's a no-no too?
Correct.
Damn. Because those...
In my research, there is not a single two-door, two-seat, and when I say long bed, I just mean not one of those little short bed numbers.
Yeah, the little square box.
Yeah, I'm not talking a 10-foot long pickup bed. I'm just talking small pickup truck with the short cab instead of the four-door cab. And I don't need four doors in a front and back seat. But can't buy them. Don't exist.
I'll be damned. I have a feeling there's going to be more of that. You know, the thing... you can't... I remember I was talking with Boss Man Wayne a couple of years ago. And he said, you know what? You cannot get a Ford pickup truck with a standard transmission anymore.
I don't think there's a pickup truck on the market with a standard transmission anymore.
No. And the modern automatic transmissions are all drive-by-wire. I mean, welcome to the future, I guess. Damnedest thing. So there's a happy little story. Thank you for dragging us out of Israel and Gaza, Roger. There's a happy little story that goes with this. I popped into the little Rippy Mart up the road from my son and daughter-in-law's to air the tire back up and went in to get quarters. Jesus. At least when I pumped quarters into a machine back in the day, I got to play Ms. Pac-Man. Now I just get air. It's more expensive. And of his own volition, the fellow there at the store said, there's a tire and auto center just on down the road on the way to Bluntville. And they'll probably hook. And sure enough, I went down there, and the lady who was the front office manager said, "Oh, I'll get one of the boys to go out and put your car on the machine, and we'll find out what's got your light going. And we'll put some air in your tire for you, too." Sweet. Well, I was already aired up, but he did tell me it was a fuel sensor on the fuel rail, etc. And then he added parenthetically, them damnedest things to replace. Seems like you got to take apart the whole damned engine. We've seen it in these Fusions 1,000 times. They're bulletproof cars. They'll run for 1,000 miles, a million miles. But I tell you what, you do not want to replace that sensor. You'll be all right, ma'am. You should be okay for a good long while. You see to it when you can. They were just sweet as can be. And the lady in the front office made decals and sold them. And she had one in a pretty pink script, said Country Girl, and it showed a little, with like little swirls and stuff, and part of it was a doe in profile. I bought a decal from her because she was real kind to me. But as creepy as Tennessee is, it was yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, thank you, ma'am. You know, just sweet, kind, wonderful, lovely. So there's that.
Well, let's drift off to a little food porn for a bit.
One second. I got to hold the food porn because I definitely want that. But I got a note from Matt in San Francisco. Chaos, spelled K-A-O-S. Maxwell Smart was one of my favorites. Aside from all the concerns regarding the inhumanity of the situation in the Middle East, I also worry that the longer this goes on, the longer President Biden is seen as standing with Israel, no matter what, the more we'll see softening support for Biden from younger voters, which the last time I checked, he really needs them to win. Then on top of all that, the more chaos that happens, the more appealing a strongman type of leader is to a good size of the electorate. With the way this is progressing, I just don't see it benefiting Biden, and there are so many players who at the moment are in the sidelines but are itching to get in. If that happens, more chaos. Cui bono? To whom the benefit? Not us, that's for sure. Maybe I see Putin's fingerprints where they're not, but it seems to me that the main person who benefits from the chaos is Putin. Thank you for the validation, Matt. I appreciate it, because you look and you look and you look, and that's the only one you can see who really, really derives substantial benefit from it. And remind me, because I've got another one of those dumbass editorials about Biden's too old and nobody trusts Kamala Harris. Nobody likes Kamala Harris and they don't think she's competent. And it's like, oh, God, why does every woman have to put up with this when she gets anywhere near the presidency? And this one happened to run in the Chicago Tribune. Clarence says, tunnels. Robin, the tunnel complex strategy was a massive headache for U.S. infantry divisions in Vietnam. Oh, I know. I remember small build GIs volunteering for that duty. These guys were called tunnel rats. Many of them died and many became heroes. So I think the IDF is going to have the same struggle that the U.S. Army and Marines experienced. The tunnels today are more advanced. I do not think this shooting match is going to end well for either side. I think you're right, Clarence. And I think that's why, with the benefit of hindsight, the Biden administration, the Department of State, even the Pentagon are saying, guys, you're getting it wrong. You're acting out of passion and without reason. And I don't mean without justification. I mean without the rational faculties of the mind. It's just a bloodlust. It's a desire for backsies. It's a desire for vengeance. And here we are. Billable Rick has awarded a cowbell to Steve. Here's my cowbell. Please remind Steve that the U.S. had Bin Laden surrounded on all three sides at Tora Bora. Bin Laden was able to escape from that cave complex by exiting on the fourth side to Pakistan. The fourth side, exactly. And I remember when there was some talk of holding Bush accountable, I remember a certain president somewhere around 2009 saying, we need to look forward and not back. Anybody remember that?
Can I say something regarding that?
Yes.
This is not going to be popular. But I am actually, the more I have thought about this, I actually think history will treat Obama a lot worse than we think.
You're not going to get any fight out of me. I mean, he was a good president, but
he did some really reprehensible things and set some really bad precedents.
Yeah, like we need to look forward and not back.
And
I want Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Kentucky, to be the Saudi Arabia of coal. That one always really got all over me like fire ants.
Well, oh my God, I didn't know he said, I just threw up in my mouth.
He started saying it when he was a state senator in Illinois. Because Illinois has a coal industry. He said, I want Illinois to be the Saudi Arabia of coal.
You know, I understand what he's saying, but isn't there a fucking different, better way to say it? Yes, there is. I mean, of course there is. Number one and number, oh, Jesus. You know, I'll say the one.
I need
thing
to
that
not do these things to you.
Yeah, you know what, Robin? I will tell you this. This, I don't know what about this. Look, we have seen conflicts in the Middle East endlessly. I don't know. Maybe someone can tell me if I'm unique in this, and if I'm not, why? But this seems different, and I don't. And the fact is there are wars all over the world right now. I don't know. I can't figure out why this one, at least for me, has been as much on my mind as anything. And the other thing that really pisses me off about Obama is he set the precedent that there are circumstances under which the U.S. can kill a U.S. citizen without any due process. And he did that when he bombed Al-Awlaki in, I think it was in, it might have been, where was it, in Pakistan or Afghanistan?
Oh, damn, he killed a terrorist outside of our fucking country.
Doesn't matter. He wasn't, the guy was in a car.
Oh, wait, wasn't that Yemen?
I think it may have been Yemen, yeah. Doesn't matter. Your fucking constitutional rights do not end when you leave the country. When you are
sure they do.
No, they don't.
We had this fight many years ago.
No, they don't. That is a legal fact. That's not up for interpretation.
I'm glad you think so.
It is. Sorry, it is. God damn it, if I go to England and I have I am an American citizen, and if you read your little passport there, it says that.
Tell that to other countries.
They have to protect me, and I am entitled to all of my constitutional rights wherever I am.
And there's your American privilege.
I don't give a shit if it's my American privilege. It's anybody is entitled to the privileges of their citizenship wherever they are.
That's going to work out well for you.
I don't give a flying fuck what you think.
Hey, easy.
You can just lose
this. Evidently you do, Steve. Evidently you do.
No,
you're swearing at me.
I wasn't swearing at you.
Yeah, you were.
You can lose. No, I wasn't. I was swearing.
I don't give a flying fuck.
Not at you.
He was swearing, okay. Not at you.
Not, wasn't.
You're right, no.
You can lose the sarcasm.
Oh, me? Me, I can lose the sarcasm.
Yes.
No, sorry.
Boys, stop.
Let's just switch the subject because this is a no-win situation. You can say what you want. I can say what I want. Right. It's all theoretical.
It's not. You're wrong and I'm right.
Stop. Kate. I said okay, stop.
Steve. Really? I said let's switch the subject. Agree to disagree. No big deal.
But no, there were mistakes made, and the critical fact is that Joe Biden was there for 8 years to watch the mistakes made. Remember, Joe Biden forced Barack Obama to acknowledge the validity of same-sex marriage. None of this civil union horseshit. Marriage. You know, the flowers, the music, the fancy clothes, the marriage.
Divorce. The divorce.
Yes. Well, you know, it was good for the lawyers, too, because with gay marriage comes gay divorce. I had a friend once who said, I want everybody to be able to get married because I want everybody to understand just how horrid it is. He was embittered at the time. Let's see. So, yeah, we are at $1,000 to go, hopefully. We'll knock some of that down. And someone is on the stress line. Clarence noting, Obama legacy. I agree with you and Steve. Obama's move in Libya and Syria was a failure. Look at those countries today. The removal of Gaddafi at the time was a mistake. Russia is calling the shots in that region. Yeah, it's all a case of political act in haste and repent in leisure. And I'm tired of the repentant. That we got better things to do with our time. And, you know, again, we've done it right here. We've become entirely mired. Excuse me. In Israel. I'm sorry, Israel and Gaza. While we ignore the fight, the desperate fight for a democracy against a ravenous, authoritarian, fascist dictatorship. And by that I mean Ukraine's existential struggle against Mother Muscovy. Anyway, we've got someone on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
So, Darlene from Connecticut.
Darlene, yay, hey.
So I, first of all, congratulations on Luna.
Thank you.
To you and Annette, and I think that's really cute that she has that shock of red hair. So I'm sure Annette is very proud because she herself is a good-looking redhead. So congratulations.
So once was I. Well, at least I was a redhead.
And Luna obviously was a long time coming, but worth the wait. And because I got, you know, it seemed like she could appear at any moment, and it seemed like the day kept dragging on and on and on. And then suddenly,
right, and hence the magic of her making her grand appearance on my father's birthday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that symbolism. I like that synergy. Yeah.
And there, and
happy birthday to. Yep.
I was just going
to
say
happy birthday to Chris.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Happy birthday to Chris. I hope. He said he was getting stewed and sauced. I hope that was food porn. I got a feeling maybe it wasn't. And so if it's not, do so responsibly and as merrily as you possibly can, Chris. You're dear to us all.
So I called it because I'm glad Steve brought up what's going on in Gaza. This is something that it's extremely distressing when you see, you know, 3,000 Palestinian children. I mean, you could plunk my eldest nephew and my eldest niece in the middle of Palestine, they'd fit right in. Just in terms of their coloring and their look, their mother's full-blooded Greek. So I think because these people are trapped, they've been trapped for as long as for decades. There's no way out for them. And I fear that we're looking down the barrel of Democrats snatching defeat from the jaws of victory once again. Because this isn't sitting well, not only with Arab Americans, but also with some Jewish Americans. Now, there was a woman, a rabbi, who stood up recently during a speech that Biden was making and begged him to please call a ceasefire. And she said, we do not want what's happening in our name. And she got booed and hissed at by the crowd. Biden just stood there. They cut out, so I don't know if he said, you know, don't, you know, usually he handles hecklers very well. This wasn't your ordinary heckler. This was a rabbi who was begging him, you know, we don't want this in our name. Hillary Clinton is teaching a class, a special workshop or something like that. You mentioned the Columbia Presbyterian at Columbia University.
Right.
And a whole bunch of students got up and walked out in the middle of her lecture. Now, they said it wasn't necessarily directed at her. It was more or less a mass exodus. Again, they were described as Arab American students with other students joining with them and protesting what's happening in Gaza. And again, this sort of brings up that ugly establishment streak that we see in Democrats. And I'm sorry, but Hillary is there with that. Joe Biden, Dean Phillips, he got an earful as he was stumping in New Hampshire with his useless campaign. And an African-American woman was screaming at him and she kept saying 3,000 children were killed. Please, you know, I want you to call a ceasefire. Another man, a man got up and also swore at him, you know. And of course, Dean Phillips said, you know, what about the Israeli kids? You know, I noticed you didn't mention that. And that is just not helpful, because what happened with the Israeli children and adults is devastating as well, but it's not proportionate. The response is not proportionate. And there was a general, an Israeli general, that got on one of the programs. I don't know if it was MSNBC or CNN or whatever. Oh, and, you know, they go ahead and they drop warning, like the flyers to, you know, to warn an area that they're going to be bombing and blah, blah. He lied. It was a lie. It's just a bullshit lie. And we're seeing this disproportionate response. And to me, what that reads to me is the deaths of 3,000 innocent Palestinian children is equivalent to the deaths of the 1,400 Israelis and Israeli children.
Right. Acceptable losses.
Brown people versus white. And Obama was brought up, I think, by Steve Obama. No. Obama also said something along the lines of, you know, you don't have to deal with Benjamin Netanyahu like I do. Remember, he had mentioned something, was kind of off the cuff comment. Yet they all seem like they have to run over and kiss the rings of the Saudis. It seems like they still have to do that with Benjamin Netanyahu. And this is our tax dollars. Last I understood, 66% of the American people. Now, I don't know if that's an old stat from 11 days ago, because I was watching Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez give a very long YouTube video on why she and 17 other congressional representatives have called for a ceasefire. And she said people are really angry. She said, but this is indiscriminate. It's not proportionate. This is problematic, or if it was on a rational national today. But the 66% is probably even higher now. The 66% cuts across all political lines of Americans that want to cease fire. It crosses all political parties. We don't want to see this, and we don't like the rabbi. These are our tax dollars that are constantly being used to kill indiscriminately, and we don't have a say. It's the same damn pattern. It's the same enabling of Israel, of Netanyahu, with it's no the, strings attached.
Darlene, it's the same American imperialism. I mean, I know that sounds like jingoistic language, but it is. The Republicans do it. The Democrats do it. They just do.
But here's what's frightening. Okay, that all stated, and they're described. You know, I know Steve got into the nuances of Arab American and so on, but they were described as Arab Americans. Yeah, I think it's Minnesota. They're saying they're fed up with Biden, and
It's Minnesota. It's Michigan. Yes.
Okay, so Michigan too, Minnesota, Michigan. Clearly, Ilhan Omar has a heavy-duty population of Muslim Americans that she represents. They delivered, Arab Americans delivered some of these states to Biden. And they're so frustrated by what they're seeing, they're saying we're sitting this out. The African-American lady at this some speech in New Hampshire, she's like, I can't bring myself to vote for Biden. I'm sitting it out. I just can't do. I can't bring myself to do this.
Well, I don't think I'm telling tales out of school here, Darlene. But I've received notes along those lines to me, saying, you know, say about me what you will, but come 2024, I will not vote for Trump or any other Republican. But I'm damn sure not going to vote for Biden either. And this is not the time for that particular conversation, but it's a reality.
And it's extremely frightening, because if they think, you know, people think that it's going to be any better with a Republican or a MAGA, you know, it's not seeing the forest for the trees, but it's extremely concerning when you have basically Jim Jordan saying our dear friends in Israel, you know, and it sounds like here we are with the strange bedfellows, Democrats and the ultra maggots when it comes to Israel. And again, no strings attached. It's the same damn thing. And maybe because things have quote unquote been quiet. I mean, not that things haven't been horrific in Gaza and the Palestinian territories, but it's been quiet. Now a major war has erupted, and Netanyahu, the president, doesn't give a shit about the remaining hostages. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. And we can go on and on about how he's caused this and everything else. When the students brought that up, vis-a-vis Hillary Clinton at Columbia, some of her spokespeople said, people, you know, these students just, they gaslit them. These students don't appreciate or understand, you know, what's really happening and what's really going on there. So we're being gaslit on this. Why? Why? What is so tough? You know, AIPAC has been very quiet. You know, I would have liked her, the ADL, come in defense. Maybe they did, but I didn't hear or see a headline that the ADL came in defense of Rashida Tlaib in that ridiculous censure attempt by that horrid Marjorie Traitor Gangren.
Yes. No.
There has to be some unity with Jewish Americans and Muslim or Arab Americans in this country to say enough. And they're trapped. The Palestinian people are trapped. They're squeezed between Hamas and Netanyahu. They have no place to go.
And the sea. And Egypt. Okay? I mean, let's make no bones about that. You know, Egypt doesn't want that. No one wants the Palestinians. And there's a certain historical echo, for instance, with the SS St. Louis in what, 1939, 38? That ship tried to dock and offload Jews who were at hazard of death, and the United States and other countries said, not here. Nope. Sorry. No one wanted them.
And not to mince words, but Gaza, the Palestinian territories, it's an open-air concentration camp. It's an open-air concentration camp by Israel on those people. And you know who said that to me? A Jewish woman. She's been saying this to me for years, and we've had many discussions about it. She goes, it's a concentration camp. It's an open-air concentration camp. They are doing to the Palestinians what Hitler did to them in World War II. It's an uncomfortable truth, but it needs to be said. It needs to be stated. And it's wrong. And I know there are Israelis that don't like that. They don't. And the woman, the female rabbi, is a smart woman. She knows this is going to come back to hurt Jewish people in the end. It's always violence begets more violence. So I'm very concerned. It's heart-wrenching because the people there have no, there's no recourse for them. Food, water, everything else is being cut off. And I think I'm very concerned that this is going to hit, this is going to hurt Democrats pretty badly. Because people are already
I think you're correct. Because nobody forms up a circular firing squad quite like us. Again, we go back to the sage, wise words of Will Rogers declaring, I am not a member of an organized political party. I am a Democrat. And I wish it wasn't as true as it is.
It's an establishment streak. I think of that old establishment streak, you know. So it's somewhat symbolic that Hillary Clinton was one of the classes they walked out of, which the students, I guess, there's been a lot of complaints at Columbia by the administration there, the students, that there's been a tremendous disruption in the normal routine in classes and where kids can meet and stuff like that for their classes because the red carpet is rolled out for her.
Yeah, in fact, I've got that story in the stack, and the administration did take time to listen to the concerns of the students. I mean, but listening is not the same thing as sympathizing or empathizing. You can listen and then walk out of the room and dismiss. I remember the late Dianne Feinstein lecturing those kids from, the Sunrise Movement, about how wrong they were for talking, coming and protesting in her office about the devastation of the climate. And I remember saying at the time, she missed a great teachable moment by not looking at them, and instead of upbraiding them, saying, "Come on, kids, you know what? You're gonna take a walk with Auntie Diane. We're gonna go to Mitch McConnell's office." But when you're that hidebound, when you're that entrenched in the received wisdom, I mean, it becomes an orthodoxy, doesn't it?
Yeah. And that's why, Dean Phillips is useless. What the hell is he all about? He's just echoing Biden's stance. There's no difference here.
And
what is he trying to do?
Right, and we're playing language games, Darlene. We don't have the moral courage to say cease fire, and, they're on my filthy morning habit. Poor Joe is going to fulminate into a different dimension if this goes on much longer. And he's, "You can't cease fire. That just gives Hamas a chance to rearm." And I'm sitting there, and it's like, my pal Tara Devlin of Tara Buster says, I'll get text messages from her saying, "You hearing this shit?" Because we wake up every morning, she in Queens and me in West Virginia, and we hate watch Morning Joe. Because, even in the midst of the Civil War in the United States, they would cease fire long enough to allow the other side to gather their dead and bury their dead. There's a famous scene in Henry V where a French emissary comes back to the English camp, and Henry says, "I know not whether we have won, whether the day is ours or thine." And he says, "Oh, it's yours, and we would appreciate it if you would stop slaughtering us for a little bit so that we can gather our dead and take them off the field of battle." Well, what happens when those are civilians? I mean, you can't do a ceasefire. A ceasefire allows Hamas to rearm. Well, it also allows grieving people to pull their children, dead dust-covered children, out of the rubble and bury them before plague sets in. And so now you've got the Biden administration playing these semantic games with, "Well, it's not a ceasefire, but we think y'all should pause for some humanitarian aid to get through. That'd be mighty nice of you." But the fighting needs the fighting needs to stop, and a negotiated solution between cool heads should prevail. Look, I'll say it. The head of Hamas and Bibi Netanyahu should be taken out back and have a bullet put through both of their fucking heads. And then say, "Is there anybody here who wants to negotiate in good faith?" Because it's always the ordinary people, the normal people, the decent people who pay with their lives for the policy decisions of the leadership. I mean, is everybody in Gaza waking up every morning and the Tchaikovsky in the background, da 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 da, "Oh, death to Israel"? No, they're getting up and wondering if and when and how and what they're going to have for breakfast. And every Israeli is not waking up every morning with the Tchaikovsky playing, "Oh, fuck Hamas." They have lives to live. Who was the famous English philosopher who said, "People live their lives in quiet desperation"? Was that Hobbes?
remember. I've heard it before.
And he may have been Scots anyway. But it's so the concerns of great men are not the concerns of people trying to get from today to tomorrow. And that was probably harsh for me. It was probably harsh for me to say that those two guys should be taken out and shot. But you know,
but who hasn't thought that at some point? You know, and it's like you talk about. You know, I would go one step further and say that it's women and children that pay the price for the patriarchy, for the male, you know, first and lustful war.
I mean, can we just say? Can two chicks just say this real quick? This is a dick measuring contest between two men who hate each other, or between a bunch of men who hate each other. The single most misogynist regime in the world is said to be behind Hamas, Iran, and I see the fingerprints of another massively misogynist regime in Vladimir Putin in pulling all the puppet strings.
Awfully quiet he's been. And, you know, the idiocy of the ultra-MAGA, now the GOP is dead. I don't call them Republicans anymore. It's the ultra-MAGA party, but they, you know, they're in his pocket and they're so goddamn stupid. There was Medvedev, who moonlighted as president of Russia when Vladimir had to take some time off.
Oh yeah.
He just did a shot across Poland's bow recently, didn't he? He did. He said something along the lines of "You're going to lose your, you know, your sovereignty or whatever." Poland's next. If we don't get this right with Ukraine, there will be boots on the ground. Are these people that freaking stupid? What, you know, the ultra-MAGA, are they that stupid? Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, we had the clip early in the week, Darlene, or late last week, of the maggots cheering when Nitwit Nero mentioned World War III, and they went, "Yay, World War III!"
They're stupid. They're such stupid people.
It's a horror,
and I think as long as this drags out and the information, the loss of life, and the pictures of Palestinian men just collapsed and crying in the street, women screaming, kids running into the hospitals, what's left, the more this happens, the worst it's going to get for Biden. Because was it Matthew in San Diego?
Matt in San Francisco.
Was it Matthew?
Matt in San Francisco.
Matt in San Francisco. Yes. He's right. I think that the younger generations are less tolerant to this. They see it for miles and miles. And yes, I think that it's definitely going to hurt that that young person's vote for Biden, because, you know, all the hard work that, you know, Kamala Harris has done to galvanize the college student vote, that kind of thing, it's going to go right down the drain, because the kids are going to see, and I mean that in a very affectionate, you know, I mean, kids, I mean, I'm 58, so to me, you know, I call them kids at Columbia, and that's a compliment. You know, they're seeing this for miles and miles, and they're not going to tolerate it. So he's hurt himself with this, and I just hope he wakes the hell up. I hope that what that rabbi did, begging him, I hope it got through, or at least, you know. But the people hissing and booing her, they were disgusting. That was vile. That they turned on this woman.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
It was gross. So,
I've got a question for you.
Thriving.
I'm sorry. What? Yeah. Go ahead.
I just want to see a thriving Israel. I want to see Israelis safe and happy and free of war. I want to see the Palestinians have a state of their own where they can self-actualize. You know, quite honestly, our dollars should be going into rebuilding and helping them. You know, that's what I want to see. The answer is, yes, there are complexities, but the answers are simple. If people was just would, you know, get their heads out of their asses. But, especially Netanyahu. But anyway.
Well, I wanted to run something past you real quick because I had a question from our friend Nidia, who said, I would appreciate the group's thoughts about those who seem to think that Hamas are freedom fighters and even comparing them to the ANC in South Africa. I can't quite imagine Nelson Mandela promoting the brutal attacks on civilians. I think comparing, the ANC did some things. The ANC did some brutal things. In the time between Mandela's arrest and imprisonment and his release. I mean, history is history. But that being said, freedom fighters, I mean,
Nobody likes Hamas here. No. Nobody likes Hamas here.
No, nobody, and I mean, I'm not aware, I mean, you know, I don't know, Berkeley, NYU, there's probably some of that. And there is certainly some absolutely unvarnished anti-Semitism out there. There's no getting around it.
Oh, yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, if you want to talk about anti-Semitism, the worst examples of anti-Semitism aren't from Palestinian people or even Arabic people. Arabic people, Muslim people, and Jewish people live side by side all across America. And you know what? They're not at each other's throats. They're just not. They live, they let live. But the fact of the matter is, if you want anti-Semitism, consider the church that I grew up in. Or consider Jerry Falwell saying, well, of course the Jews are going to hell. They have not accepted Christ as their personal Lord and Savior. Anti-Semitism is alive and well in the United States, and it is alive and well among white Christian people.
Exactly. So the Jim Jordans and the MAGA Mikes or Mullah, whatever his name, Mike, there, that creepy guy.
I mean, it wasn't a Palestinian who shot up the Tree of Life synagogue, okay? And most of the anti-Semitic attacks that have taken place in the, all over the United States have not been perpetrated by Palestinians, by Arabs generally, by Muslims. They have been perpetrated by white men who call themselves Christian.
Yep.
I mean, if I'm getting any part of this wrong, straighten me out, Darlene.
Nope. No straightening out.
So.
I think Hamas needs to be smashed to bits. But killing innocent Palestinians is not the answer.
Yeah, right. And their own efforts to immiserate Palestinian people is not the answer. I mean, the ordinary, everyday, run-of-the-mill, live-in-life Palestinian has been immiserated from both directions. Both by Israel's creation of this open-air concentration camp, and now the atrocities being committed in places like Jubalia. And by Hamas, who by virtue of its stated goals and objectives make sure that Israel stays, I'm sorry, I mispronounced it, Israel stays perpetually paranoid. Israel, and this is not a slur, it's not a slur, right. Israel mm-hmm. is a paranoid state. At least from the point, at least from the standpoint of its fundamentalist, extremist government. You know, there are voices in the Knesset who will speak out against this monstrosity. And because of the parliamentary nature of their government, however, and coalition building, you know, we criticize our first-past-the-post electoral system a lot, and justifiably so, but what you wind up with in parliamentary systems is watered-down government or extremist government that either runs roughshod or does nothing at all. And Itzhak Rabin is still dead. At the hands of an extremist Israeli Jew.
And it probably didn't help that, you know, the assassination of Itzhak Rabin.
And that which that changed one weird the course
of
that
a lot.
Yeah, it did. It killed the peace movement. It killed the two-state solution movement. Yep. It accomplished its goal. And I keep going back to that one American Orthodox Jew visiting Israel before this horror even began, who went on a rampage in an Israeli state museum and destroyed a couple of 2,000-year-old sculptures, screaming that it was an offense to the Torah. It's always the fundamentalism.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yes. Yes. Because, you know, statistically, we've heard for many years that the vast majority of the Israeli people don't want what Netanyahu and the extremists.
They want to get up in the morning, have breakfast. They want to go. You know, they want to go to concerts
and enjoy their beautiful country. You know, I mean, people who are Jewish in this country, I mean, to go to Israel, that's a major pilgrimage for them.
Sure.
And I work in the Jewish community for a number of years.
It's Muslims making the pilgrimage to Mecca. It's Catholics going to Rome.
Yeah.
It's Baptists going to the liquor store.
Yeah. And you talk to anyone who's been there, a Jewish person who's been to Israel, they're like, my God, it's the most beautiful country. It's so beautiful. So, I hate to see this happening. And all the innocent children and women. And anyway, I've said enough. I've dominated enough. All the guys are quiet, so I'm going to bow out and let them.
Well, darling, it's lovely to hear from you on the front porch.
I don't. And arguing.
I don't feel quite so lonesome.
Well, there you go.
Tracy pops in every now and then, but you know, most of the time I'm the only girl in the group.
Yeah. So I thought I would just try. I felt a need to weigh in because I am very concerned about this from many different angles. You know, I don't want to see anyone getting killed, hurt, die. You know. And it's our tax dollars. Our money is, you know, like the rabbi, the female rabbi said, you know, we don't want this in our name as Jewish Americans. We don't want this as Jews. We don't want this in our name.
Right. Americans
don't want this in our name.
And remember what undergirded marginal trailer queens' dumbass motion to censure was a protest in D.C. that Rashida Tlaib spoke at that was organized by Jewish peace groups.
Exactly.
You know,
Rashida Tlaib
is a mess. I mean, she gets so emotional and crying. I mean, this woman's got a heart of gold. Rashida Tlaib has a heart of gold. She is like somebody that just, she feels it so deeply. So I do not see her as being hostile to people who are Jewish. I just don't see that in her character. I don't see it. So Marjorie Taylor Greene is the vicious wolf in sheep's clothing. And I hate to insult both wolves.
Despicable. And sheep. Despicable. I don't know if you ran across it, but there's
disgusting.
I saw a story earlier today before airtime that there are actually decent human beings in Georgia who are avidly watching the redistricting of Georgia in the fond and sincere hope that they won't be in her damn district anymore because they're tired of being tired of being judged for having her for their Congress creature.
Well, yeah, she's like Jim Jordan, isn't she? Isn't her district gerrymandered to hell, and that's how she gets in?
Oh, yeah.
I thought she's one of them, too. So, yeah.
Yeah, her district looks like a malaria germ.
As opposed to a salamander.
Exactly. Well, Darlene, you have a lovely weekend, dear.
Guys are quiet, so yes, thank you. I'll continue to listen in, and but I just need to unload this because this is
I understand completely
distressing and disturbing. So, all righty, take care. Bye.
See ya. Bye.
About damn time the men were quiet.
Yeah. Well, I was about to pop in and say thank y'all.
Can I just say something real quick about the Santos vote?
Yes. Could you turn your fan off?
Oh, sorry. Did you see one of the Democrats who voted no? Was Rashida Tlaib?
Yes. And I don't think that was simple back scratching.
Oh no, but I think it was I think there was a deal because right after that they didn't even let the marginal Sporkfoot, whatever her name is, her resolution even come to the floor.
Yeah, marginal trailer queen got her ass tabled.
Yeah, I think that was a horse trade.
I don't think it was. I mean, there were too many Democrats who voted no on it. I mean, Jamie Raskin voted no.
I wonder why.
Oh, he said why.
Oh, what did he say?
He said, I'm a constitutional lawyer. He said, we have thrown 5 members out of this House over the history of the Republic. 3 of them we threw out for being traitors during the Civil War. 2 of them got thrown out after they had been convicted of crimes.
Ah, okay.
And as much of a shitbird as George Santos is, he has not yet been convicted, and I'm a real due process kind of dude.
And frankly, I think I like it because, at least from a purely Machiavellian perspective, the Republicans get to wear that until next election.
Yes. Wear it. You know, you can make an albatross can be used as a scarf, Steve, and scarves can be tied into all kinds of different shapes and forms. And the thing is, though, they're wearing it. And the New York delegate, the New York Republican congressional delegation is having a shit hemorrhage about having to run with him on the ballot. Oh, we tried to get rid of him. But and the Democrats get to point to the albatross.
I'm going to shut up the rest of the night, even though it's not that much. I've been shutting up since for a while. So I want to hear from Darlene. I like hearing from Darlene because she always has some. I can't tell you how many times she said something, and I found myself raising my finger and going, "Oh fuck yeah!" I talk too much tonight.
Yeah, Darlene always brings her A game.
Hello, everyone.
Is that you, Ben?
Yeah, I finally was able to get in. The last couple weeks, I haven't been able to get in.
Sorry about that. I know nothing about that sort of thing. I just wanted to point out, because I had a note from TJ. Roger, TJ is an automobile guy, too. And he said, regarding Roger's search for a two-door regular cab pickup, it looks like the Dodge Ram Classic offers that. I didn't check to see how long the bed is, but I'm guessing it's at least 6.5 feet long. I have a Toyota Tacoma regular cab, and it's got a 6-foot bed, whereas a lot of these bigger pickups only have a 5-foot or even a 4-foot bed. Yeah, those little square boxes. And then added, Ford offers a regular cab, too. So the research department is jumping to your aid, Roger.
I guess I'm just stuck in the regular program where I just do stuff in the chat. I posted a thank you. I will definitely look into it because a 2002 pickup with 225,000 miles on it is something I've been wanting to replace for a little while. And I just haven't been able to find them. But I'll look at the Dodge and I'll check Ford. I wouldn't mind going electric, but again, they're all four-door numbers tonight. I could deal with a king cab, although I'd like a regular cab. But anyhow,
I think the Chevy Colorado comes in a two-door variety with an extended cab, little jump seats.
Those jump seats. My jump seats are in absolute pristine condition.
Yeah, Roger, if you're going to go Ford, my only recommendation is you don't get one of the newer ones that have the all aluminum bodies.
Okay.
Those aluminum beds on the newer Ford pickup trucks are a pain in the ass.
You can easily puncture them really easy.
Well, I'm just a 78-year-old man that's been driving a pickup ever since I started buying cars back in 1972, I think it was. And I just need a little truck. My lifestyle, yes, I live in town, blah, blah, blah. But I also do country stuff. Like the other day I went out and there's a place that tore out a hazelnut orchard. And I'm doing some wood turning stuff for pounding sauerkraut into jars and all that. And there was a pile there. And I went and asked if I could cut out limbs that, I could turn on my lathe. And they said, yeah, go for it. So
Roger, if you could get some bigger pieces and just let it sit and cure, that's great smoking wood, hazelnut.
Well, I've got access to a ton of it, and now I'm making all kinds of little chips. But anyhow, I do pickup kind of stuff, pickup truck kind of stuff. When the kid needed a new patio, all of a sudden my pickup got used to haul the 2x4s and the 4x4s and throw the trailer for some of it. And I do pickup stuff and I want a pickup. And if we want to take the grandkids anywhere, we'll use the wife's van. I don't need passengers and the rest of that shit.
Well, exactly. Anyhow. I lost my pickup truck and was no fault of any. It was the fault of the pillhead who hit Annette. Rear-ended her. I lost my pickup truck on December the 31st, 2011. And it may sound crazy, but if you live in a rural area and you lose your pickup truck, shit changes. I mean, in rural America, your ability to do certain things is profoundly circumscribed by the absence of a pickup truck. So, I get it, Roger. I get it. Oh, boy, do I get it.
And I'd like to apologize for jumping in and out tonight, but my two loaves of sourdough are now out of the oven. So, I've been babysitting.
Roger, food porn, yes. Hurt me.
And I'm teaching, co-teaching a class tomorrow on fermentation and pickling. And we're going to be making sauerkraut and doing spiced pickled pears.
Oh, yummy.
Oh, Kevin reacted. Okay, Kevin at the very beginning was talking about a party that he's going to go to, and I posted a recipe to him on sauerkraut balls, and basically they're a meatball with sauerkraut in it and sour cream, and rolled in cornmeal, and then deep fat fried.
Oh, I've had them; those are so tasty.
And when I make them, when we just do a Saturday class or a Wednesday class or something like that, I usually make them for the class, for our fermentation classes. But I'm too busy doing other shit, so I didn't make them. But when he talked about his party, they always go over really great.
Oh, those would be heavenly.
And I'm still being AWOL in the regular chat on a frequent basis because I'm back to trimming. And then also I've been AWOL in the chat because the Master Food Preservers here, we always have a big jam and jelly sale in December for people for Christmas presents. And once a week we've gotten together, usually on a Thursday, and in 10 to 2, so 4 hours, we turn out about 100 half-pint jars of various jellies and jams. And I've been the master water bath tender in water bathing the jams and jellies. So things might calm down in the not-too-distant future, and I can get back to my usual duties. But in the meantime, I'm
Well, we're happy. Yeah, we're happy to know that you're using your time wisely. And you mentioned those sauerkraut balls. I've had those. They're so good. My other favorite thing to do with sauerkraut is sauerkraut pierogies. Kevin, if you ever want to channel your inner Yinzer, make homemade pierogies and stuff them with sauerkraut. And oh God,
oh boy, yeah.
And once you boil them and they're done and everything, you take them out, you cool them, you drain them, and just brown them in butter. And people will lose their tiny minds.
And then on a really good vein, an acquaintance came up to me and made me a gift because I've done some nice things and I didn't really expect it. But I am now the proud owner of a manufactured in January of 1947.
Oh, wow.
An all-American pressure canner.
Oh.
And if anybody's into canning, there's Miro and there's Presto, and those are kind of the Ford, Dodge, Chevy class of canners. And then there's the All-American, which is Cadillac. And there's going to be a lot of elbow grease with mother's polish on it to shine it back up and that. But
can you still get the gasket and everything for it?
There is no gasket on an All-American. It's metal to metal.
Oh, wow.
With the little screw-down knobs all the way around?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those.
I think
the aluminum made back in those days was a lot heavier and thicker, and they are the Cadillac. The new ones are good. I'm not knocking the new ones, but the antiques are fantastic.
I think it was one of those in the book version, not the movie, but in the book version of Forrest Gump by Winston Groom. It is one of those with the screw-down lids that Forrest Gump blows up during basic training in the Army, and the drill sergeant walks out, covered in stew, and the only thing he's capable of saying is, "Gump, boiler, stew, Gump, boiler, stew." And, Roger, with all of your fermentation and your sourdough bacon and stuff, I don't know if we've ever gone over this, but have you ever made salt rising bread?
No, I'm aware of it, but I've not made it. I'm not really a baker, and I'm still fighting on trying to get a decent sourdough to puff up to where your slices look good and all the rest of that. I just don't seem to have the knack, but I keep trying. It tastes good. It just doesn't.
If you can find it online, the best sourdough starter, and it's almost counterintuitive, but the best sourdough starter I've ever used is the sourdough starter that one of Jeff Smith's, I think it was the Frugal Gourmet Cook's All American Cuisine or something. And the sourdough starter for that is foolproof. And it's my go-to when I do it.
Well, the chemistry of sourdough starter, no matter what sourdough starter you get and wherever you get it from, the first couple of times you use it, it'll remain true to whatever it is you got. But as you use it, everybody's sourdough starter takes on its own unique character and flavor, because the yeasts in my house here in Oregon are very different from the yeasts in your house in West Virginia. And as you use your flour, it depends on where you get your flour from, the chemical composition of your water, and the yeasts in the air. And so everybody's sourdough starter will become unique to the environment in which you are working.
Yes.
And that's the reason the San Francisco sourdough has its own unique flavor, is that the wild yeasts in the air of San Francisco remain somewhat consistent because of the ocean breezes and all that. So the different bakeries in San Francisco are tending toward the same sourdough because of the wild yeasts in San Francisco.
Oh, God, some real San Francisco sourdough. Be still my heart. Well, this sourdough starter recipe is basically water, flour, cultured whole milk, buttermilk, a little bit of sugar, just a little bit of salt, and cornmeal that has been ground with the germ intact, because the germ is where the is where the yeast is hiding. And it works really well. I need to send out thanks to Jeremy. Jeremy, thanks for jumping in. I appreciate you, my friend. You got us down to 980 to go. So that's very helpful, and I do appreciate it. I got to clear out, though. The back porch will continue in my absence after I close the broadcast and start the upload process. I'm going to do the upload, and then I think I'm going to sleep for 12 hours. It's been a long couple of 3 days, and thanks for y'all's forbearance as I was gone for the arrival of a very, very sweet little girl. And just thank you. Thank you all. And thank you for all the kind wishes and kind words. So that's a broadcast week minus 2 days. Back on Monday, and I'm sure we'll be up to our armpits and more hands. That's almost guaranteed. Thank you to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you so much. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to our three friends who provide the matching funds for Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. Thanks to everybody for jumping in and making sure that got fulfilled. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, no matter how you do so. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Roger, you're a very busy man. Thank you very much for taking time to be here and moderate and run the call and so forth. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. HeadOn.live exists because of Brother Deacon Asa, and I do so appreciate you, my friend. And thank you, and please like and subscribe to the podcast. We're actually growing the program a little bit, seeing a few more downloads here and there, and that's because you're liking and subscribing and leaving comments for the Lonely Hearts algorithm, algorithms out there on the podcast platforms. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for environmental justice and human rights in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster, get your flu shot, get your RSV vaccine. Wear your mask when you're around groups of more than five, especially if they've got any maggots in them, because those people probably aren't vaccinated. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance as best you can. And good Lord, if a spork-footed creature from the derp lagoon comes toward you, Rashida Tlaib, I'm sorry, she mispronounces it. Rashida Tlaib started an insurrection. Well, avoid her like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Love you, Wayne. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.